reliance upon astrology, that, you know, the stars determine what your fate is going to be, what your mazel is. If you remember that, for example, each nation has its tsar, it has a literally a prince, it has, in other words, an angel in heaven that looks after its destiny. And of course, you know, times that they fight with each other. The tsar shel Esav is at war with whom? With the tsar shel Yisrael, okay. But what he's saying over here is, nevertheless, we do find that there are heavenly forces that look out for us. Of course, it reminds us of the Pasuk we have in Tehillim, Ki Malachav Yitzavach Noach Nishmor B'chol Noachecha, right, that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam will command his angels to take care of you and to carry you through whatever difficulties you may. So they saw it, even if these Nevi'im did not see the
vision.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So Inu Adivi Mine, right, Inu Nevi'im, right, so okay. Matalechon. Right. Omer Rabino. So now we continue. Rabino said, Shema Mino. From this story we learn what? Haim on the Mavis, whoever is afraid, Afogab the Yuhulay Chazim. So even though he doesn't see the reason why he should be afraid, right? Just that he has like a premonition which causes him to tremble. But nevertheless, mazel eichotze. Okay? So his mazel, you know, is aware of what the problem is.
Mazel meaning what?
His mazel, as I said, in the sense like a guardian angel, so to speak. Right. By takante. All right. Now, if you have this trembling, what can you do in order to fix up the situation, you know, that it should turn out to be good? So he says, Likre Krishma, Lane Krishma, read Krishma. If you have Soros, read Krishma. Right. The Ye Chaim in the Kematinoifus, and what happens if at the time when he wants to say Krishma, he's standing in a place which is full of filth? Yeah, so it's a filthy place. So then in that case, Ninsha Biduchte Abba Gamini, then let him take a leap of four steps or so from over there, in order to be Arba Abba, as we would say, away from it. Right. Okay. The Elol, and let's say there's no room for him to move and he can't jump four paces away. So has another suggestion. Lema Hochi. So let him say the following. This is an incantation. Okay? What is the incantation? You know, magic formula, okay? What is a magic formula? He says, Iza Debeitabche Shmeinu Minai. You should tell whatever evil, let's say, whatever evil cause is happening, whatever evil, let's say, an evil a malach or something is causing the trouble. He says, why do you pick upon me? He says, take a look. A goat in the butcher store, he says, is fatter than I am. I'm a skinny guy, what are you picking upon me? Go pick upon a big fat goat and let him carry it away. I don't know if over here the goat has a reference to the fact that on Yom Kippur, you know,
yeah,
the part of, one of the integral parts of the service in the Buddhist Beis HaMikdash was the fact that they would send a scapegoat, right? You know, he carried the sins of the people of Israel upon his back and so on, and removed them. So, all right, so you have Soros and you can't do anything else, and Krishna doesn't help. So, in that particular case, say, go pick another goat. Okay, yeah. Yeah, we still have some pages over here. Okay, yep. Okay, good evening, Beverly. Good evening, David. Good evening to everybody. Okay. All right. Now that we have gotten past these various statements, primarily which were attributed to Rabbi Yirmiyah, or others say to Rabbi Yechiya Bar Abba, so now we get back again to what we were saying before we got interrupted, so to speak. But remember,
sidetrack.
Yeah, sidetrack. I explained to you last week, as I have on many occasions, I mean, that inasmuch as they had to keep in their own mind, you know, orally, various traditions, so if they knew that Rabbi Yirmiyahu and others say, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba said, so they said this statement, so on. But now it's time to get back to the subject of the Gemara. All right.
But they kept record even though they were off on a tangent?
Yeah. There were people especially trained with tremendous memories. Uh-huh. Okay? Sometimes they were called actually Tanoim. Okay? And they had good memories, so that when they wanted to put together something, you know, they would ask, you know, what did you hear? What did you learn? Do you have a tradition concerning this or that? And so on and so on. And eventually all this was gathered together in the form in which we see it. But, you know, this is a process that took several centuries. If you remember, the Mishnah itself represents traditions that go back, let's say, from the time of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, which would be at least 500 years prior to the Common Era, right? And going into the year 200 of the Common Era. In other words, a span of 700 years, okay? Traditions. And then, in the time of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the Sanhedrin and Yavne, they got together and they determined, you know, all these various traditions are to be accepted and put in a form in which people would be able, you know, to refer to them again and again. And so they took on the entire subject matter, whether it was Zeroyim, which deals, you know, primarily with laws pertaining to agriculture, such as Shavias, such as quarter of the field, such as giving tithes, right, Mashras, Trumas, and so on, and so on, and so on. And there are a million technical terms over there. Different plants, this plant, that plant, and so on. I mean, you really need a dictionary, you know, in order to know any one of these various things that they were referring to. Or take Taros, for example, which deals with this item is subject to becoming unclean, and this one is subject also to becoming tummy and things like that, and so on. Have all these various traditions, and this is, of course, in addition to what was about Shabbos and Yom Tov. And you know, you name it. For example, the Zikin, you know, damage is done by this one, and harm done by this one. How do you interpret laws of usury? And how do you interpret this? A tremendous amount, and they put it, and they arranged it so that you have the origin of the Shulchan Aruch is actually the Mishnah, and then what happened? Then the Mishnah became the subject of discussion. And this is what we see all the time, right? It says, first we start with the Mishnah, and then you have the Gemara, which is a discussion based upon the Mishnah, interpreting it. So that from the time of the Mishnah, which was about the year 200 of the Common Era, till the time that the Babylonian Talmud was gathered together, it was a period of 300 years of discussion. So naturally they had to call upon people with tremendous memories, people who had traditions, and you know, they gathered all this material together. Now remember, in addition to the text that we have, right, they are quoting not just the Mishnah, they're quoting a Tosefta, they're quoting Baraisas. So there are all kinds of these traditions. It's really a remarkable piece of work when we consider it from the point of view, you know, what it took in order to make the Mishnah. So if they use mnemonic devices such as three or four different statements by the same author, so we can understand why this, even though to us it seems like we're being sidetracked for the moment. Okay. All right.
They never found the computer they used. They never found
the computers. They didn't have computers in those days. They had minds that worked like computers. Okay. All right. So we get back now to an interpretation of a pasuk that we find in the beginning. Okay? We find over there, you know, that the Jews are told to celebrate Purim, you know, Medino, Medino, Ir, Vair, but also we find Mishpacha, Mishpacha. Now, the first one, Medino, Medino, Ir, Vair, this we interpreted, you know, to mean, for example, here we learn the difference, you know, between a walled city and an unwalled city, right? And, essentially, we learned, you know, what dates have to be and so on. All right, so we interpreted all that. God's fine. And one of them was used in order to determine, is Shushan an exception or Shushan an example, right? Because we say, you know, that the cities that are walled from the days of Yehoshua bin Nun, right? So those cities, you know, follow the example of Shushan. But maybe it's not so. Maybe Shushan is an exception, but this is a tradition already, you know, that they should observe, you know, the 15th of Adar and not the 14th. Okay. All right. But what do we do with Mishpacha? Mishpacha. That we didn't use then. So now they're going to use Mishpacha, Mishpacha and give the drash of that. Okay. So he says, right, of course, it means, you know, family and family. In other words, according you celebrate Purim in a different way depending upon, you know, what family you belong to. Okay, so Gemara continues on and says, V'hashto da amrit, now that you have already given an interpretation, you said, what is Medina Medina Neva here? Right? Lidrasha, so we have it in those words, are given to us that we should use it in order to learn various dinim from it. So, Mishpacha, Mishpacha, Labayosa. So tell me, why do these words, Mishpacha, Mishpacha, what are they here for? What are they here in order to tell us? So, Abba Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina said, Lahovi Mishpachos Kehunu Leviosh Mevatan Avedasonim Vandishman Mikromigil. He says, this is to tell us that even special families, families of Kahanim, or families of Leviim, that they are to set aside the avoda that they're doing in the Beis Hamikdash, right? Uvayin Lishma Mikromigil, in order that they can come and listen to the reading of the Megillah. Okay, the Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav, as Rav Yehuda said the name of Rav, he said Kohanim ba'avodasot, the Kohanim when they are performing their avoda in the Beis Hamikdash. Of course, what is their avoda in the Beis Hamikdash? It's in the whole Seder of the Korbanos. Okay, Ulevim Menuchonim, and or likewise the Israelites, the Ulevim, who have their function upon the Duchan. The Duchan, if you remember, this was the platform upon which they sang the psalms that were chosen, you know, to be chanted, you know, during the time of the Avodah. And they even played musical instruments, you know, in order to accompany, you know, the Levim were skilled in these various things. The Yisrael b'Ma'abodot, and likewise, even the Israelites who were there as part of the Ma'abod. Remember, we learned in Tanis that Eretz Yisrael was divided into 24 different districts, okay? And twice a year, the cycle was that you would have Kohanim, Levim, and Yisraelim from a particular district who would come in order to perform the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, so that every Jew could feel that he's being represented in one way or another, okay? Like a House of Representatives, so that they had him in to the Beis HaMikdash in order to perform the service, and then that included also Yisraelim, you know, who were there as representatives of their local area, okay? So, it's what Rav is saying over here is that even the Kohanim, even though they are supposed to be in, doing what? Performing the Avodah. Or the Levim is supposed to be performing their job on the Duchen. Or Yisraelim, who are supposed to be there in the Beis HaMikdash and so on. But nevertheless, Kula Nevatin Avodasan, they all have to put aside their Avodah, their jobs that they are doing in the Beis HaMikdash. Uvoyin Nishmo HaMikra Megillah. And they have to come and listen to the reading of the Megillah. So, from this, what do we see? We see that the reading of the Megillah, even in the case of special families who normally would be engaged in what? In performing the Avodah, the Beis HaMikdash, right? Kahanim, or Levim, whatever they were doing over there, they too have to put aside the work that they are doing in order to listen, in order to come and listen to the reading of Megillah. Okay? And the Gemara now continues by citing a Beraisa, says, Tanya Nabehocha, We have learned likewise a similar statement which says Kohanim Avet Asom Ulevi'im Edu Chanom Yisvev Ma'amodon, right? Kolam Evatan Avet Asom Uvein Lishmo Mikro Megillah. That's the same idea, right? That they put aside their work and they come in order to hear the reading of the Megillah. So the Gemara now continues, says Mekan Somchol Shel Beis Rabbi. So from this we find that the household of Rabbi, of course Rabbi is Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, that in his household they found support for what? Shemavatlan Talmud Torah, that they put aside the study of Torah, Uvoyin Lishma Mikra Megillah, and they would come and listen to the reading of Megillah. Of course, the question is, what do you mean, Mevatlan, you know, the Talmud Torah? It means, in other words, that the ordinary learning session that they normally would have scheduled at that particular point, they have to postpone it in order to listen to the reading of the Megillah. So, Kal Nechoima, and this they derived by reasoning, you know, Kal Nechoima, namely, Me'avoda, from the temple service. Ma'avoda, inasmuch as Avoda, Shehi Chabura, which is far more, well, shall we say, I don't like to use the word severe, but, you know, it's more demanding, all right? It's more demanding. But nevertheless, Mevatlino and Talmud Torah, nevertheless, we are told that they have to set aside, Ma'avoda Shehi Chabura, right? Inasmuch as, Mevatlino and Talmud Torah, low culture came. So, and then in that case, the study of Torah too should be put aside because it's not as a severe requirement as the Avoda is. So all the more so it should be. So now the Gemara challenges that. What do you mean? You mean to say that Avoda is, for example, more important than the study of Torah? The Avoda, Chabur, and Talmud Torah, is this what you're trying to tell me? That the Avoda and the Beis Hamikdash, in other words, sacrificial service, or let's say davening or something like that, is more important than Talmud Torah? The Hawk Siv, isn't it written? And now they quote what we find at the beginning of Sefer Yeshua in the fifth chapter over there. It's written by Yehi B'Yosu Yeshua B'Yericho. And it came to pass that when Yehoshua was in Yericho, actually he wasn't in Yericho, he was outside of Yericho at the time, if you remember, the Jewish people were there and they were told to prepare that they're going to get ready in order to surround the city and eventually the Rebbeinu Shalom would give them the opportunity, you know, to conquer the city. But in the meantime, the Jewish people had barely crossed the Jordan River. They were right, and lo and behold, all of a sudden, there's Yehoshua. By Yisa Einov, he lifted up his eyes, Vayar, and he saw. What did he see? He saw a man standing in front of him. Vayishtachu la'apa. And what did Yehoshua do? He prostrated himself before this person. So the Gemara asked the following question: Ve'echi Yavin Hachi, how come he did such a thing? From Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, didn't Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi say, Oser liyodom sheiten shalom lechavu b'layla, that a person should not greet somebody in the middle of the night? Now, of course, who is the somebody? The answer is somebody whom he doesn't know. Somebody who he doesn't know, he shouldn't say hello to him in the middle of the night. Why? Because maybe he is a shade. You know, he's he's an evil spirit. Okay? So how do we know? Why did Yehoshua do this? He tells him, you know, hello, happy to meet you. No, I'm sort of paraphrasing. It's not exactly what it says, but I'm paraphrasing it. Maybe this man that he saw before him was an evil spirit and not an angel, right? Okay? So, Shana Hassan. The Gemara says, well, the case is different over there in the case of Yeshua. Why? The Omalei, because what did the man say to him? He said to him, Ki ani satzva Hashem. He says, I am part of the army of the Rabbeinu Shalom. In other words, you know, I'm an angel. So, so Gemara says, no, V'dilma Mishakri Gemira. Excuse me, V'dilma Mishakri. It says, yeah, but maybe the guy was telling a lie. Maybe he was lying. So, Gemira, we have a tradition which says, the Leimavke Shem Shemayim Vaton, that they're not going to quote the name of God in vain. So that from this, he knew that standing before him was Taka, somebody who was an angel, was a member of the Tzva Hashem, right? And he wasn't, you know, Stam Hashem. Okay. So Amaloi. So now what did the person, you know, what did this man say? What did this angel say to him? So he said to him, Emesh, he said, Yahushua, you know what? Yesterday, Bitaltem Tomin Shabinu Abayim. Yesterday afternoon, he says, he should have sacrificed the, you know, the daily sacrifice that takes place during the afternoon hours, right? And you didn't do it. All right, we understand. You were busy. So the army had to be prepared. You were busy moving, etc., etc. Okay. But the Achshav, now, here you are, and you settle for the night. Bitaltem Talmud Torah. You're going to also... you're going to be mevatel, you're not going to go through with the study of Torah. So Omar lo, so Yeshua said to him, Al Eizeh Mehen Bosa, says, for which of these two things that you were chiding me for, whether it was Bittul Avodah or Bittul Talmud Torah, which of them, for what reason did you come? So Omar lo, so he said to him, and the quotation is Ato Mosik. Now I have come. So the question is, what is now I have come? So it says, I have come for that thing which you just mentioned. Namely, what did you just mention? Talmud Torah. That's the reason why I'm here, because you were Mevatel Talmud Torah. So what happened? Vayolon Yeshua Balayla Haru B'Tzorcha Emek. So we find that Yeshua spent the night in the midst of the Emek. Emek, of course, means the valley. But, yes. Did you have a question, Sam? Oh, yeah, of course, right.
Okay,
absolutely.
Where are we going?
Okay, now we have to find... Yeah, it should begin with the word Malamed. Malamed, those we finished already. Malamed, where's Malamed? Give me a sheet that begins with the word Malamed. Not this, unless it's mixed up over here. So I know
here
I
here it is.
Malamed, good. Okay, see, we're looking for the Malamed.
Pass up the other one.
Okay.
Pass up so we don't mix them up.
All right.
Careful, it doesn't keep going until you get the other one.
You give them back, you get it.
Yeah, give me the. How many down there? There are a few more. That's coming back.
Okay.
Need more.
Baruch Hashem, we need more. Okay.
Here we have plenty.
Yeah.
Okay. Does everybody have a text?
I know where are we?
Yeah. Okay.
Wait a minute.
Ready with Malamed? Okay. Omer Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan said this word, Vayolan Besocha Emek, which means that he spent the night in the midst of the valley, Besocha Emek, he interprets the word Emek in a different way. He says, Malamed, this teaches us, this verse teaches us, Shalom de Umka Shel Halocha, that what he was doing was to be sunk deep into the valley of Halocha. In other words, he was spending the entire night studying Torah, to know how to lead the people of Israel in the next stage of the conquest of Eretz Israel, to know how to do it in accordance with the God's instructions. The Yomar Ashmul Baunya. So far we've come to the conclusion what? That which is more important, Avodah or Talmud Torah? So from the story of Yoshua and how it's interpreted, it's Talmud Torah, right? The Yomar Rav Shmuel Bar Unya, Shmuel Bar Unya said, Godol Talmud Torah Yosef Me'akubas Temidim, says, as a matter of fact, the study of Torah is even greater than the sacrifice of the daily sacrifices. Shenemar, as it is written, Atavasi, right? In other words, the way we interpret it, that the angel says to him, now I have come. In other words, I've come for that which you just mentioned, namely Talmud Torah. Okay. So, the problem is, of course, isn't it important to have also Hakrovas to meet him? After all, we say, how did the people of Israel approach the Rebbeinu Shleilam back in the days when the Beis HaMikdash was in existence? It was specifically, you know, through the sacrificial system. Of course, prayer came along with it too. But this represented the opportunity in order to find kapora, in order to find forgiveness for our sins that we trespass during the course of our daily life from the Rebbeinu Shleilam. Okay? Yes, well, we have all kinds, including the Torah, which is Thanksgiving, correct. But as I say, another function is, you know, to find kapora, to find forgiveness from the Rebbeinu Shleilam for the sins that we commit, okay? So, if that's the case, he says, lo kasha. He says, this is not a tremendous problem, he says, because, Hode Rabim, the Hode Yochid. Okay. The Talmud Torah of a whole group of people, in other words, when people gather together in order to learn, this is more important. But, more important than what? Not really than we're talking about the Avodah, but it's more important than what? Than foregoing the study of, than reading the Megillah, he would say. But Hode Yochid, right? If a person is just, you know, small, he's learning by himself, or he's learning with a small group or something like that, then in that particular case, what should we do? We should put aside our learning temporarily and go and listen to the reading of the Megillah. This is what started the argument in the first place, okay? So, now they say, what, saying that a small group or a yochid is not important? Udi Yochid Kal, I mean to say that's not as important as a whole group study. The Hot Nun, didn't we learn as follows? And this is a Mishnah that we find in the Gemara, Moed Katan. Moed Katan, okay? Moed Katan over there, the final chapter, has many, many adopim which deal with the laws of mourning. Avelis, okay? And of course, what is the connection between Avelis and Moed Katan? Of course, the answer is very simple. Because we know that you observe Avelis, but there are certain times when we do not observe it. Namely, if a person, for example, would pass away on Yontif itself, or Chol HaMoed, you know that you cannot observe Shiva on that day, okay? You have to wait until Yontif is over before you can begin to observe Shiva, okay? And of course, it's Shiva and Shloshim and things like that. Or, on the contrary, what happens if a person, let's say, started to observe Shiva, and then along came Yontif? So in that case, what is the rule? Along came Yontif. So we know that Yontif cancels out the Shiva. Right. If a person was now in a period of Shloshim, right, and Yontif came, so the same thing, then in that case, Shloshim would be cancelled out. As for example, a person passed away, let's say, a couple of weeks ago, okay? So the mourners are supposed to observe Shloshim 30 days, but when Shavuos comes, this coming Sunday, so it cancels out the rest of the time. They don't have to observe anymore. So that's the reason why Avelis plays such an important role in the Gemara in Moed Katan. But also, the ways that they mourned in the time of the Mishnah, time of the Talmud, were a little bit different than the way we do it. Then they used to have women who would go and they would serve as mourners. Really? In what sense? So we'll see. Yeah, you see it, for example, among Arabs, you know. Right, okay. And they had different things. Okay, for example. All right, so the Mashal. Yeah. Right. Okay. So, says, well, hot nun, didn't we learn? It says that Noshim Moed Anos Avalomitapos, that on Chol HaMoed, if you know a person passes away, so at the Levaya, then the women are ma'anos. Ma'anos means that it's like recite a dirge together, okay? But v'lo metapchos, but they do not beat their breasts as a sign of mourning, okay? They did that too. In other words, as they went along, you know, they go, oi, 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 you know, clopping, okay, all right?
Clapping hands together?
No, I don't mean clapping their hands. Well, maybe, yeah, I mean, I have to tell you, there's a difference of opinion as to exactly how it was carried out, okay? But one would say, you know, that you clap hands, and others would say, you know, that you beat upon your breast, okay? Which to me makes a little bit more sense, I mean, because we know that, you know, clapping and dancing, you know, is the way that you express the mourning.
You shouldn't clap your hands on Shabbos because of that. You shouldn't look like...
There's a big... So I started to, they asked him, how about, the Targum of the Ketuvim? So the Baskol said, enough, right?
Yeah.
So the question is, my Tama, what reason did they discourage him from writing a translation for Ketuvim, for the writings? Right? So he says, Mishum de Isbeketz Mashiach, right? Because in it we find a revelation of when the time of the Mashiach is going to come. Where do we find it? Of course, the answer is in the book of Daniel, where we have all kinds of mysterious statements, particularly in the very last chapter of Daniel, where, you know, it has numbers of the people from time immemorial have been trying to figure out on the basis of the numbers that he gives as to when the Mashiach is going to come. Okay? So in order to discourage this, this is why he was told not to write a targum for Ksuvim. Okay. In reality, of course, we have targumim for that. I mean, if you take any copy of Treyosor and the Mikra, the regular copies, you know, that we find over here, you know, where you can take a look and you'll see, you know, that we do have targumim to all the various books. Well, some say that, for example, the book of Daniel is a later targum, okay? Others say that the book of Eov, of Job, is a later targum and so on. But obviously we have, because we can see, you know, that certainly in the days of the Talmud, people were able to give targumim, you know, translations in Aramaic of, for example, Sukkim and Tillim, to try to explain what it's all about. So, and of course, in Tillim, as you discover, you know, when you say it every day, not every verse is 100% clear. So you have to, that's why we resort to English translations too, in order to try to understand a little better, or to Perushim in Hebrew, whatever it may be, because not every word is a word that we would normally use.
It's really targeted
right.
The translation.
Yes.
Wasn't Daniel
exactly.
Writing in Aramaic?
Daniel? Okay. The answer is that part of Daniel is written in Aramaic and part of it is written in Hebrew. Okay? The same thing is true, incidentally, of the Ezra and Nehemiah. Part of it is also it's written partly in Aramaic and the rest is written in Hebrew. Okay? And of course, that's a Gemara which points out that even in the Torah itself, there are two words in Aramaic. Does anybody remember where they are?
Aramaic.
Give you a hint. It's in Sefer Bereishis. Not Parshas Bereishis, but Sefer Bereishis.
The story of Lavan?
Yeah. Go ahead. Correct? Yeah.
That's where
okay.
I
the answer is Lavan pursues Yaakov, if you remember. And it's written that they made a compact, you know, not to, and so Laban called the place Yegar Sahadusa, and Yaakov called it Galed, meaning, you know, the pile which is a witness of the treaty, okay. And there's also one pasuk in the Yirmiyahu, incidentally, which is also Aramaic over there. So from that we see, you know, for the defenders of the Aramaic language, they said, well, look, you have in the Torah, you have it in Nevi'im, and you have it in Ksuvim. There's no question in Ksuvim. I mean, you have, you know, quite a bit of Aramaic in Ezra and Nehemiah.
Aramaic was the language of the Babylonians, right?
Yes. But it wasn't the original language of Babylon. However, Aramaic became the language spoken by people in the Near East. And for several centuries, Aramaic was competing with Greek as to which would be the language of the Near East, at least some part of the Mediterranean world, okay? And of course, you know, our sages in Eretz Israel, needless to say, they used Aramaic. Many of them understood Greek and used Greek as well. And of course, we see it, you know, that in the Mishnah, we have Aramaic words, we have Latin and Greek words, and they've all become, you know, good citizens of Hebrew. What happened?
Well, what language did the people speak when they went into into the Eretz Yisrael? What language did they speak?
Okay, the answer is that they spoke both Aramaic and Hebrew when they went to Eretz Yisrael. You mean when they came back from Babylonia?
No. I thought you
used to speak.
I'm talking about the original language.
The original language.
When Joshua brought them into the land.
Okay. The answer is okay. Excuse me. The people of Israel spoke Hebrew. They were Ivrim. They spoke Hebrew. Okay. Sometimes I get these sneezing spells. It'll last for a few minutes. All right. So they spoke Hebrew, okay? Just to the north, in this, what is today Syria, in those days it was called Aram. Naturally, what language were they talking? They were talking Arami? They spoke Aramaic, okay? Yeah. Excuse me. The question is about the Canaanites, okay? The Canaanites spoke a language which was fairly close to Hebrew. How do we know that? Archaeology. We have, for example, a stone
You want some water or something?
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. They discovered a stone tablet, not in Eretz Israel, but in Moab. Okay? It's the stone of Mesha Melech Moab, in which he boasts about his victory over the people of Israel, okay? It is written in a language which is fairly close to Hebrew, so that you can understand a good deal of it, you know, just from the basis of your knowledge of Hebrew, okay? Of course, they also use an other Hebrew lettering, which in the Gemara in Sanhedrin they refer to it as Kesav Da'atz or Ra'atz. That is, you know, the funny looking things that you see, which actually form the precursor of the alphabet that we have in Greek and Latin and so on. Sometimes it would be interesting to make a little study of these things. Because I discovered many, many years ago when I was studying that the Greeks, when they adopted this Semitic alphabet, so they were writing from right to left. They wrote from right to left.
Really?
Very old. One of the oldest inscriptions that they have in Greek was written from right to left. Subsequently, they did fakir. They decided to write from, from left to right, so that you can see, I mean, what happened. All right. Let's say this is what a gimel looked like, okay? This is the way it looked, okay? But of course, you know, it's not unsaid. It could be like this, could be like that, and so on and so forth. I mean, they were not careful. But this is what the Gibbel looked like. What did they do? They went and they turned it around subsequently so that this became the Greek Gamma. Okay? It became the Greek Gamma. Yeah, okay, right. And as a result, when the Romans took over the Greek alphabet, they originally pronounced that letter not as K, but as G. How do we know? One of the most common Roman first names, including Caesar's name, was spelled C-A-I-U-S. How is it pronounced? It's pronounced Gaius. Okay, Gaius, right. So we see that there's still a remnant over there. Of course, later, you know, it became all the time a K, okay? So in order to distinguish a K from a G in the Latin alphabet, what they do, they wrote the letter C, and they put a little line over there, and that made it into a G sound, okay? But it all started with the Gimel, which originally was written like this,
and
right?
Turn around.
And then turn around, right?
But did the Assyrians speak Memphis? Also have a
No, they spoke Assyrian.
Huh?
They spoke Assyrian. However, here again, Aramaic became a language that was spoken like an international language in that part of the Near East, okay? So that Babylonians and Assyrians and so on, they could communicate in Aramaic, okay? Now, we have the story in Melachim Beis that the king of Assyria besieged Yerushalayim. And what do we find? So we find that the people in Jerusalem, he wanted to, you know, propagandize, tell them that they should surrender, okay? So he did not speak to them Aramaic, in Aramaic. Remember, this is the king of Assyria, right?
Yeah.
He didn't speak to them that language, but what language did he speak? He spoke to them Yehudit. Well, the language of the people of Judah, right? The Jewish language he spoke.
Yeah. Nothing to do with the moon. They have brought 30,000 Assyrians to the world, and they are clamoring for acceptance. And guess who the leader is? The fellow of the poet, Captain Nimrod.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Anyway, all right. So let's get back to our Gemara for a little while. Yeah, I see. Okay. Wait for a few more minutes yet? Okay. So, all right, so we see in order that the Rabbeinu Shalalem did not want the secret of when Mashiach is coming to be revealed, therefore he discouraged Yonatan ben Uziel from translating the Ksuvim into Hebrew. Okay, into Aramaic, excuse me. All right. But now they ask the question, with Targum Shel Torah Unkelus Hagera Moro. You mean to tell me that it was Unkelus, the convert, who was the one who authored the Aramaic translation? The Omer Rav Iko Bar Rovin, we have a statement made by Rav Iko Bar Rovin, Omer Rav Chananel, the name of Rav Chananel, Omer Rav, who said in the name of Rav, what? Says, my disif, what is the meaning of the pasuk that we have in the book of Nehemiah, which tells us how Ezra HaSofer gathered the people together, right, in order to read to them the Torah so that they should accept the teachings of the Torah, learn the Torah, and accept the teachings of the Torah. And this is what the Pasuk says. It says, Vayikru b'sefer Torah Elohim for Rosh, right, that they read in the book of the Torah of God, Mefor Rosh, which means clearly or explicitly or something like that, will come to a moment. Alright, Mitzum Seichel, and also giving them to understand what it means, right, Vayavinu Bamikra, and also that they should understand, you know, what the text of the Torah is. So now they analyze this passage. What does it mean by Yikru B'Sefer Torah Elokim, right? He says Zen Mikra, means what did Ezra read unto them? He read to them the from the Sefer Torah. You understand? The scroll of the Book of God. Okay, the Mikra. Now, what is Meforosh? In other words, what is? We translated a moment ago as clearly, explicitly, but Meforosh means translated or something like that. So he says Zeh Targum. In other words, he wasn't content just to read to them in Hebrew, but also at the same time he wanted to explain to them what is the meaning of each of the pesukim that he read. This was the Targum. Then what does it mean by Vesum Sechel? In other words, that they should have understanding. He says Elo HaPesukim means that he told them where a verse ends. This is a verse, this is a verse, this is a verse, and this is a verse. Why? Obviously, you take a look at the Sefer Torah. If you ever have to learn how to read the Torah, you know that you have a paragraph, there's no punctuation, there's no nothing, and you have to know, how to read it correctly, okay? Right, so you have to know where is the end of a pasuk and where is the beginning of another pasuk, okay? Vayavinu b'mikra, and what is that? And that they should understand, what the Torah is all about. It says, Eila piskei ta'omim, right? So one explanation for this, for Avinu b'mikra, is that Rashi says these are the trop. These are the trop. In other words, the melody that we use in order to read the Torah outlines is the very, very ancient. Okay?
Yeah, but the trop outlines the logic.
They certainly do. They certainly do.
You know where the end of the sentence is.
Yeah, it's not only that. The truth of the matter is that in Hebrew, we don't call it trop. Trop is a later word that came, although it's from the Greek word, okay? But we call it in Hebrew ta'amim, ta'amei ha-mikra, okay? These ta'amim, they are actually, they're almost like punctuation marks as well. In other words, the esnachto and the sof pasuk, they represent the end of. The sof pasuk obviously means the end of the pasuk, right? And the esnachto is like the major break
in
the,
like a comma.
Right, okay? Not like a comma, but more like a semicolon or something like that, okay? Then we have notes where some lead into the next and some are pause notes. As for example, Mayapach, Pashto, that we all know, right?
Yeah.
These are lead-in notes. But the Zarkev Katan, this is a pause note. Because it indicates this is at the end of a little phrase, a subphrase within the sentence, okay? And the same thing, Mercho is, it leads into the next thing, whereas a Tipko is a stop note, okay? Stop note, as we're approaching, either the Eslachto or the Sopasok and so on, okay? So, as a result of that, we learn how to phrase correctly the words within the pasuk itself.
Or those that read the Torah do it incorrectly.
Yeah, of course.
Because most of that I've heard,
But it's interesting.
They don't, you do with the Torah.
Right, absolutely.
They don't, because they give credit for what they're doing, but they're reading the Torah without
who?
The memory of the Torah.
Yes. Sam was talking about, for example, some of the places in Florida where he started, or something like that.
But also, without the correctness of the Torah, they sometimes are not phrasing the sentencing correctly. They're even like overrunning the end of a sentence into another.
Right.
How about the Ammonites? The Ammonites don't read that way. The Ammonites, they come up at the end of a sentence.
No.
They come out, they have a different sentence. They have a different.
With the Yemenites or the original Sfardim or something like that,
they
still read according to the Ta'amim, but their interpretation of the melody that goes to Ta'amim is different from the
Ammonites. I noticed they go up at the end of the sentence. Yeah.
Whatever it may be, but the point is they're still doing it, but they're doing it the way they have their tradition, how it should sound, as compared to the way our tradition is, how it should sound. Okay? All right, we'll do just a little bit more and we shall call it a night. My voice is beginning to say bye-bye. All right. All right. So one interpretation is Vayavinu by Mikra means Elu Piskei Tehomim. As we said, this is then, you know, the notes and what do they represent in the structure of a sentence, right? The Yom Eloah, however, there are those who say that Vayavinu by Mikra means Elu HaMesoris. Okay?
Yeah.
That this refers to the Mesoris, meaning, of course, the correct text, the spelling, the Korean Ksiv, and things of that nature. This is the Mesoris, okay?
Right.
Yeah, it's more than punctuation. It's the words themselves. Look, you can have a word, for example, here that's written. Normally, let's say in Hebrew, it might have it one letter, and instead of, they write it with a different letter or something like that, okay? Or they'll leave out a letter, or they'll add a letter or something like that, okay? This is Mesoris, for example. All right. There's an Aleph over there which is not pronounced, right? But it has to be written there because it means that the mob, you know, that came out of Egypt and created all the problems for Moshe Rabbeinu in the wilderness, okay? So there you have an Aleph. And I can give you Yishneh, for example, which should be written, let's say, with a hay, and it's spelled sometimes with an aleph or something like that. So this is Mesoris.
Right. They have footnotes for that.
Yeah, correct.
Exactly. They give you the pronunciation in the footnote to say where it's not printed.
In the book of Ruth, there you really have the places where a word is not said, even though it's written, and another word that you have to add, even though it's not written in the text, or something like that. How do you know? That's Mesoris. You have to study it in order to know how to do it correctly. Okay, so it's the traditional text which has to be handed on, and you know. Mesoris Siyog LaTorah, as it says in Pirkei Avos, the Mesorah serves as a fence in order to guard the Torah from, you know, being violated. So in the sense, you know, that the people read all kinds of different things into it. Okay. All right. So let's see. We'll halt it over here. Right. So again, yeah. So, getting back again, you know, to the whole business about what was the role of the prophets, right? The Tzofim, right? So he says, Shechachum. So he says, you know, yeah, it's true. In the time of Ezra, this is it. In the time of Ezra, he gave a Targum translation, right, to the people at the same time that he read the Torah. But what happened afterwards? Shechachem, people forgot what the traditional explanation, in other words, what the Aramaic explanation should be of the text. So v'chosu isudom. So therefore, along came Onkelos, and along came Yonatan ben Uziel, and that's the reason why they gave their Targum translation. Okay. Then the Gemara asks, Maishno de Raisot lo izdazo, van levia izdazo. So, why do we notice that in the case when Onkelos HaGer translated the Torah into Aramaic, Eretz Israel did not tremble, didn't shake, didn't tremble, right? Didn't quake. But when it came to the translation of the Nevi'im, is Daza, right? It shook. So he says, there are Raisa, Mifresh HaMilsa. As I said a few moments before, that when it came to the Torah, the words are quite clear as to what it means. Whereas in the V.A., in the case of the prophets, Ikom Mile de Mifreshon, Vikom Mile de Mistavim. It says there are words which are very clear, but there are also words which are mysterious. They're hidden. Dirsiv, and they give an example right now. There's a Pasuk which says, Vayom Hahu Yigdal HaMispeid V'Yerushalayim, on that day, mourning will increase in Yerushalayim, kemispeid hadad rimon bevikat Megiddo, just as mourning for hadad rimon in the valley of Megiddo. Okay, so the Omer Rav Yosef said, "Il mole targumo da haikra." If it weren't for the fact that we have a targum to explain what this sentence means, lo yadalam like Omer, we wouldn't know what actually the prophet is saying over there. It's Prophet Zechariah, incidentally. So Micah Amar, well, what did he say? So he says, on that day, he says, Yeske Mispedo Birushalayim, the mourning in Jerusalem will increase. Kemispedei the Achav Bar Omri, the Kotel Yose Hadad Rimon, just as the mourning that the people of Israel indulged in for the, when Achav, the son of Omri, died. And he died, he was killed in battle by Hadad Rimon, so that takes care of that one, right? Hadad Rimon ben Tav Rimon. And where did this happen? This didn't happen in Megiddo, but it happened where? It happened in Ramot Gilad. But Uchmis Peda, and also, like the mourning, the Yoshio bar Amon for King Josiah, the son of Amon, the Kotol Yasei Parachagiro Bevikas Bito, who was killed in battle by Pharaoh Chagira in the valley of Megiddo. Now, if you take a look in the text, the last one, namely in Malachim Beis, you'll find out that he's not called Paro Chagira, which means the name, but he's called Paro Necho. That was his name. His name was Necho. But the word Necho in Hebrew has a suggestion of somebody who is Neche Raglayim, in other words, somebody who is lame. And so the Jews did not want to honor this Pharaoh who had killed their beloved king, and so they called him Pharaoh the Lame. Okay? Paro Necho. So that's Paro Chagira. Okay. All right. So we'll stop at this particular point tonight. We are right now in the middle of Amud Gimel. Today is Luchzuk, the 23rd of the month of May, the year 2001, and we are continuing now Maseches Megillah, Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, towards the bottom of the page, second half of the page. All right, we have at this particular point a quotation now, which comes from the book of Daniel, and the question is, what is the relationship? Well, the answer is, if you remember, we've had already about three or four different statements that were made lately by Rav Yirmiyo, right, who quoted Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. Okay, or there are those who say it was Rabbi Chiya, not Rabbi Yirmiyo. So this is the last of the series over there. All right. Now, what is the reference over here in Daniel? So they quote, first of all, Daniel says, "V'ra'isi ani Daniel levadi," and I, Daniel, alone saw es hamara, the vision. But the people who were together with me, they did not see the vision. As we know, Daniel had many, many different visions that are described in the book of Daniel, you see, okay? So he saw a vision, and the people who were with him, however, did not see the same vision. But the text continues, Aval charodog adolo nofla lehem, ayivachum hechaveh, but a great trembling fell upon them. In other words, they suddenly became very much afraid, and they fled in order to hide themselves. So the question that is raised now is, Man ninhu anoshim? Who are these people who are with him? Who are these men who are with him? Some are Rabbi Yirmiyo, v'yitim Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. He says, Ze Chagai Zechariah Malachi. They were Chagai Zechariah Malachi, who, as we know, these were the last three of the Nevi'im. Okay? And they were contemporaries of Daniel, because they all prophesied at the time of the Babylonian conquest and the beginning of the Persian takeover of the Babylonian realm.
They all lived at the same time, all three of them at the same time.
Yeah, approximately. Right. They were contemporaries. Right. Yeah. So Omarak, so then the Gemara continues and says, Inhu adifei minei, yihu adif binayhu. It says, those people were superior to him in a certain way, and he was superior to them in another way. How so? Inhu adifei minei, they were superior to him, the inhu nevi'ei, they were prophets. Take a look among the Nevi'im, they are listed officially as Nevi'im, whereas Daniel is not listed as a Novi. Instead, where do we find Sefer Daniel? We find it in the Ksuvim. Okay? The Yehu loved Novi, right, but he was not a Novi. Okay. But on the other hand, Yehu other Midayu, he was superior to them in another way. Why? The Yehu Chazo, he had a vision. The Yehu Lai Chazo. But they did not see the vision. So now the Gemara says, "V'chi me'achad aleichozu." So if they didn't see it, inasmuch as they didn't see it, my tamoi visu. Then for what reason did they become frightened? Right? You know the men. Why were they frightened all of a sudden? So he gives an explanation. He says, "Apol gav the idu lechazu." Even though he didn't see it, and even though they didn't see this vision, excuse me, but mazalaihu chazu. But you know, they had like guardian angels up in heaven, you know, who look after them. And they saw it. So that's why these people trembled, even though without knowing why it was that they trembled at the sight of the vision. You know, we have a statement that says they mazel the Yisrael, which doesn't mean literally that the Jews have no mazel. It can be interpreted that way, but it doesn't really mean that. What it means is that we Jews are not subjected to such things as the stars. Okay? There's a very famous Medrash, and of course, you know, it's quoted by Rashi as well, you know, it's about Abraham Avinu. That, you know, Abraham Avinu takes a look at the stars and so on and so forth, and he's despondent because he says, you know, what good is all that I have if I don't have a child, right? So Beirish Shalelem says to him, according to the Medrash, says, reliance upon astrology, that, you know, the stars determine what your fate is going to be, what your mazel is. If you remember that, for example, each nation has its tsar, it has literally a prince, it has, in other words, an angel in heaven that looks after its destiny. And of course, you know, times that they fight with each other. The tsar shel Esav is at war with whom? With the tsar shel Yisrael. But what he's saying over here is, nevertheless, we do find that there are heavenly forces that look out for us. Of course, it reminds us of the Pasuk we have in Tehillim, Kim alochav yitzarot loch, nishmor v'chol du'achecha, right, that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam will command his angels to take care of you and to carry you through whatever difficulties you may. So they saw it, even if these Nevi'im did not see the vision. Right. Okay. Yeah. So inu adif minei, right? Inu nevi'im, right? So okay. Matalechon. Right. Omer Rabino. So now we continue. Rabino said, "Shema mino." From this story, we learn what haim on the mavis. Whoever is afraid, afal gav de yuhu lechazim. So even though he doesn't see the reason why he should be afraid, right? Just that he has like a premonition which causes him to tremble. But nevertheless, mazel eichazei. Okay? So his mazel, you know, is aware of what the problem is.
Mazel meaning what?
His mazel, as I said, in the sense like a guardian angel, so to speak. Right. By takante. All right. Now, if you have this trembling, what can you do in order to fix up the situation, you know, that it should turn out to be good? So he says, Lekrei Kriyashma, Lein Krishma. read Krishna. If you have tzoras, read Krishna. Right? And what happens if at the time when he wants to say Krishna, he's standing in a place which is full of filth? Yeah, so it's a filthy place. So then in that case, then let him take a leap of four steps or so from over there in order to be arba abbas, as we would say, away from it. Right. Okay. The Elo, and let's say there's no room for him to move and he can't jump four paces away. So has another suggestion. Lemo hochi. So let him say the following. This is an incantation. Okay? What is the incantation? You know, magic formula, okay? What is the magic formula? He says, Iza Devetab Khesh Meinaminai. You should tell whatever evil whatever evil cause is happening, whatever evil, let's say, an evil balach or something is causing the trouble, he says, why do you pick upon me? He says, take a look. A goat in the butcher store, he says, is fatter than I am. I'm a skinny guy, what are you picking upon me? Go pick upon a big fat goat. I don't know if over here the goat has a reference to the fact that on Yom Kippur, you know, one of the integral parts of the service in the Buddha's Beis HaMikdash was the fact that they would send a scapegoat, right? You know, he carried the sins of the people of Israel upon his back and so on and removed them. So, all right, so you have tzoras and you can't do anything else and Krishna doesn't help. So in that particular case, say, go pick another goat. Okay, yeah. Yeah, we still have some pages up here. Okay, yep. Okay, good evening, Beverly. Good evening, David. Good evening to everybody. Okay. All right. Now that we have gotten past these various statements, primarily which were attributed to Rabbi Yirmiyah, or others say to Rabbi Yechiel Bar Abba, so now we get back again to what we were saying before we got interrupted, so to speak. But remember,
sidetrack.
I explained to you last week, as I have on many occasions, I mean, that inasmuch as they had to keep in their own mind, you know, orally, various traditions, so if they knew that Rabbi Yirmiyah and others say, Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba said, so they said this statement. But now it's time to get back to the subject of Megillah. All right.
But they kept record even though they were off on a tangent?
There were people especially trained with tremendous memories. Uh-huh. Okay? Sometimes they were called actually Tanoim. Okay? And they had good memories, so that when they wanted to put together something, you know, they would ask, you know, what did you hear? What did you learn? Do you have a tradition concerning this or that? And so on and so forth. And eventually, all this was gathered together in the form in which we see it. But, you know, this is a process that took several centuries. If you remember, the Mishnah itself represents traditions that go back, let's say, from the time of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, which would be at least 500 years prior to the Common Era, right? And going into the year 200 of the Common Era, in other words, a span of 700 years, okay? Traditions. And then, in the time of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the Sanhedrin and Yavne, they got together and they determined, you know, all these various traditions are to be accepted and put in the form in which people would be able, you know, to refer to them again and again. And so they took the entire subject matter, whether it was Zoroyim, which deals, you know, primarily with laws pertaining to agriculture, such as Shavias, such as quarter of the field, such as giving tithes, right, Mashmas, Trumas, and so on, et cetera. And there are a million technical terms over there. Different plants, this plant, that plant, and so on. I mean, you really need a dictionary, you know, in order to know any one of these various things that they were referring to. Or take Taros, for example, which deals with this item is subject to becoming unclean, and this one is subject to also to becoming tummy and things like that, and so on. have all these various traditions, and this is of course in addition to what was about Shabbos and Yom Tov, and you know, you name it. For example, the Zikin, you know, damage is done by this one and harm done by this one. How do you interpret laws of usury, and how do you interpret this? A tremendous amount, and they put it, and they arranged it, so that you have the social, you know, like the origin of the Shulchan Aruch is actually the Mishnah. And then what happened? Then the Mishnah became the subject of discussion. And this is what we see all the time, right? It says first we start with the Mishnah, and then you have the Gemara, which is a discussion based upon the Mishnah, interpreting it. So that from the time of the Mishnah, which was about the year 200 of the Common Era, till the time that the Babylonian Talmud was gathered together, it was a period of 300 years of discussion. So naturally they had to call upon people with tremendous memories, people who had traditions, and you know, they gathered all this material together. Now remember, in addition to the text that we have, right, they are quoting not just the Mishnah, they're quoting a Tosefta, they're quoting Baraisas. So there are all kinds of these traditions. It's really a remarkable piece of work when we consider it from the point of view, you know, what it took in order to make the Mishnah. So if they use mnemonic devices such as three or four different statements by the same author, so we can understand why this, even though to us it seems like we're being sidetracked for the moment. Okay. All right.
They never found the computer they used. They never found
computers. No, they didn't have computers in those days. They had minds that worked like computers. Okay. All right. So we get back now to an interpretation of a pasuk that we find in the Megillah. Okay? We find over there, you know, that the Jews are told to celebrate Purim, you know, Medina, ir v'ir, but also we find Mishpacha. Now, the first one, Medina, and ir v'ir, this we interpreted, you know, to mean, for example, here we learn the difference, you know, between a walled city and an unwalled city, right? And, you know, essentially, we learn, you know, what dates have to be and so on. All right, so we interpreted all that. God's fine. And one of them was used in order to determine, is Shushan an exception or Shushan an example, right? Because we say, you know, that the cities that are walled from the days of Yehoshua ben Nun, right? So those cities, you know, follow the example of Shushan. But maybe it's not so. Maybe Shushan is an exception, but this is a tradition already, you know, that they should observe, you know, the 15th of Adar and not the 14th. Okay. All right. Well, what do we do with Mishpacha? Mishpacha. That we didn't use that. So now they're going to use Mishpacha and give the drash of that. Okay. So he says, right, of course, it means, you know, family and family. In other words, according to you celebrate Purim in a different way depending upon, you know, what family you belong to. Okay, so Gemara continues on, says, Hashta the Amrit, now that you have already given an interpretation, you said, what is Medina, Medina, Nivayir, right? Lidrasha, so we have it in those words are given to us that we should use it in order to learn various dinim from it. So, Mishpacha, Mishpacha, Labayosa. So tell me, why do these words, Mishpacha, Mishpacha, what are they here for? What are they here in order to tell us? So, Abba Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina. Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina said, Lehovi Mishpachos Kehunu Leviosh Mevatun Aved Asonu Von Nishma Mikro Megillah. He says, this is to tell us that even special families, families of Kahanim, or families of Levim, that they are to set aside the avoda that they're doing in the Beis Hamikdash, right? In order that they can come and listen to the reading of the Megillah. Okay? The Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav, as Rav Yehuda said the name of Rav, he said, Kohanim ba'avodasot, the Kahanim, when they are performing their avoda in the Beis Hamikdash. Of course, what is their avoda in the Beis Hamikdash? It's in the whole Seder of the Korbanos, okay? Ulevim and Nuchonon, and or likewise the Israelites, the Levim, who have their function upon the Duchan. The Duchan, if you remember, this was the platform upon which they sang the psalms that were chosen, you know, to be chanted, you know, during the time of the Avodah. And they even played musical instruments, you know, in order to accompany, you know, the Levim were skilled in these various things. The Yisrael b'Ma'amadot, and likewise, even the Israelites who were there as part of the Ma'amad. Remember, we learned in Tanis that Eretz Yisrael was divided into 24 different districts, okay? And twice a year, the cycle was that you would have Kohanim, Levim, and Yisraelim from a particular district who would come in order to perform the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, so that every Jew could feel that he's being represented in one way or another, okay? Like a House of Representatives, so that they had him in to the Beis HaMikdash in order to perform the service, and then that included also Yisraelim, you know, who were there as representatives of their local area, okay? So, it's what Rav is saying over here is that even the Kohanim, even though they are supposed to be in, doing what? Performing the Avodah, or the Levim is supposed to be performing their job on the Duchen, or Yisraelim, who are supposed to be there in the Beis HaMikdash and so on, but nevertheless, Kulon Nevatin Avodah, they all have to put aside their Avodah, their jobs that they are doing in the Beis HaMikdash, they have to come and listen to the reading of the Megillah. So from this, what do we see? We see that the reading of the Megillah, even in the case of special families who normally would be engaged in what? In performing the Avodah, the Beis HaMikdash, right? Kahanim or Levim, whatever they were doing over there, they too have to put aside the work that they are doing in order to listen, in order to come and listen to the reading of the Megillah. Okay? And the Gemara now continues by citing a Baraisa, says, Tanya Nabi Hocha, we have learned likewise a similar statement which says, Kohanim Avid Asom, Wurdeviyim Educhanom Yisweb Ma'amodon, right? Kolom Evatan Avid Asom, Vaynishmo Mikro Megillah. That's the same idea, right? That they put aside their work and they come in order to hear the reading of the Megillah. So, the Gemara now continues, says, Mekan Somchol Shabbos Rabbi. So, from this, we find that the household of Rabbi, of course, Rabbi is Rabbi Huda Nossi, that in his household, they found support for what? Shemavatlan Talmud Torah, that they put aside the study of Torah, Uvoy Nishma Mikra Megillah, and they would come and listen to the reading of the Megillah. Of course, the question is, what do you mean, Mevatlan, you know, the Talmud Torah? It means, in other words, that the ordinary learning session that they normally would have scheduled at that particular point, they have to postpone it in order to listen to the reading of the Megillah. So, Kal Nechoima, and this they derived by reasoning, you know, Kal Nechoimer, namely, Me'avoda, from the temple service. Ma'avoda, inasmuch as Avoda, Shehi Chabura, which is far more, I don't like to use the word severe, but, you know, it's more demanding, all right? It's more demanding. But nevertheless, Mevatlino and Talmud Torah, nevertheless, we are told that they have to set aside, Ma'avoda Shehi Chabura, right? Inasmuch as, Mevatlino and Talmud Torah, no culture came. So, and then in that case, the study of Torah too should be put aside because it's not as a severe a requirement as the Avoda is. So all the more so it should be. So now the Gemara challenges that. What do you mean? You mean to say that Avoda is, for example, more important than the study of Torah? Va'avoda chabur min Talmud Torah, is this what you're trying to tell me? That the Avoda and the Beis HaMikdash, in other words, sacrificial service, or let's say davening or something like that, is more important than Talmud Torah. The hawk sieve, isn't it written? And now they quote what we find at the beginning of Sefer Yeshua in the fifth chapter over there. It's written by Yehoshua. And it came to pass that when Yehoshua was in Yericho, actually he wasn't in Yericho, he was outside of Yericho at the time, if you remember, the Jewish people were there and they were told to prepare that they're going to get ready in order to surround the city and eventually the Rabbeinu Shalom would give them the opportunity, to conquer the city. But in the meantime, the Jewish people had barely crossed the Jordan River. They were right, and lo and behold, all of a sudden, there's Yehoshua. By Yisa Einov, he lifted up his eyes, Vayar, and he saw. And what did he see? He saw a man standing in front of him. Vayishtachu la'apa. And what did Yehoshua do? He prostrated himself before this person. So the Gemara asked the following question. How come he did such a thing? From Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, didn't Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi say, also the Yodom, Shiten Shalom Nechavir Balaylo, that a person should not greet somebody in the middle of the night? Now, of course, who is the somebody? The answer is somebody whom he doesn't know. Somebody who he doesn't know, he shouldn't say hello to him in the middle of the night. Why? Because maybe he is a shade, he's he's an evil spirit. Okay, so how do we know? Why did Yehoshua do this? He tells him, hello, happy to meet you. No, I'm sort of paraphrasing. It's not exactly what it says, but I'm paraphrasing it. Maybe this man that he saw before him was an evil spirit and not an angel, right? Okay? So, Shana Hasab. The Gemara says, the case is different over there in the case of Yeshua. Why? The Omalei, because what did the man say to him? He said to him, Ki ani satzva Hashem. He says, I am part of the army of the Rabbeinu Shalom. In other words, I'm an angel. So, alright, so Gemara says, V'dilma Mishakri Gemira, V'dilma Mishakri, it says, but maybe the guy was telling a lie. Maybe he was lying. So, Gemira, we have a tradition which says, that we're not going to quote the name of God in vain. So that from this, he knew that standing before him was Taka, somebody who was an angel, was a member of the Tzva Hashem, right? And he wasn't, Stam Hashem. Okay. So, Amaloi. So now, what did the person, what did this man say? What did this angel say to him? So he said to him, Emesh, he said, Yehoshua, yesterday, Bitaltem Domin Shabinu Abayim. Yesterday afternoon, he says, he should have sacrificed the daily sacrifice that takes place during the afternoon hours, right? And you didn't do it. All right, we understand. You were busy. So the army had to be prepared. You were busy moving, etc., etc. Okay. But the Achshav, now, here you are, and you settle for the night. The Taltam Talmud Torah, you're going to also, you're going to be mevatel, you're not going to go through with the study of Torah. So Yeshua said to him, Al Eze Behen Bosa, says, for which of these two things that you were chiding me for, whether it was Bittel Avoda or Bittel Talmud Torah, which of them, for what reason did you come? So Omaloi, so he said to him, and the quotation is, Ato Bosi. Now I have come. So the question is, what is now I have come? So it says, I have come for that thing which you've just mentioned. Namely, what did you just mention? Talmud Torah. That's the reason why I'm here, because you were Mevatel Talmud Torah. So what happened? So we find that Yeshua spent the night in the midst of the Emek. Emek, of course, means the valley. But, yes. Did you have a question, Sam? Oh, yeah, of course, right.
Okay,
absolutely. Okay, now we have to find...
Yeah,
should begin with the word melamed. Melamed, those we finished already. Melamed, where's melamed? Give me a sheet that begins with the word melamed. Not this, unless it's mixed up over here. So I know
here
I
it is.
Melamed, good. Okay, see, we're looking for the melamed.
Cash up the other one.
Okay.
Cash up so we don't mix them up.
All right.
Yeah, Jeff doesn't keep going until you get the other one. You give them back, you get them. Yeah, give me the.
How many down there? Two, three,
there.
Here are a few more. That's coming back.
Okay.
More. Need more.
Baruch Hashem, we need more. Right. Okay.
Here we have plenty.
Yeah. Okay. Does everybody have a text?
I don't. Where are we?
Yeah. Okay.
Wait a minute.
Ready with Malamit? Okay. Omar Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan said this word, Vayonan Besocha Emek, which means that he spent the night in the midst of the valley, Besocha Emek. He interprets the word Emek in a different way. He says, Malamet, it teaches us, this verse teaches us, Shalom de Umko Shel Halocha, that what he was doing was to be sunk deep into the valley of Halocha. In other words, he was spending the entire night studying Torah, to know how to lead the people of Israel in the next stage of the conquest of Eretz Israel. To know how to do it in accordance with the God's instructions. So far we've come to the conclusion what? That which is more important, Avodah or Talmud Torah? So from the story of Yoshua and how it's interpreted, it's Talmud Torah, right? The Yomar Rav Shmuel Barunya, Shmuel Barunya said, Godol Talmud Torah, Yosem Akumas Tamidim, says, as a matter of fact, the study of Torah is even greater than the sacrifice of the daily sacrifices. Shenemar, as it is written, Atavasi, right? In other words, the way we interpret it, that the angel says to him, now I have come, in other words, I've come for that which you just mentioned, namely Talmud Torah. Okay. So, the problem is, of course, isn't it important to have also Hakrovas to meet him? After all, we say, How did the people of Israel approach the Rebbeinu Shel Olam back in the days when the Beis HaMikdash was in existence? It was specifically, you know, through the sacrificial system. Of course, prayer came along with it too, but this represented the opportunity in order to find kapora, in order to find forgiveness for our sins that we trespass during the course of our daily life. Okay. Yes, well, we have all kinds, including the Torah, which is Thanksgiving, correct. But as I say, another function is, you know, to find kapora, to find forgiveness from the Beinu Shalem for the sins that we commit. Okay. So, if that's the case, he says no kasha. He says this is not a tremendous problem. He says because. The Rabbim, the Hode Yochid. Okay. The Talmud Torah of a whole group of people, in other words, when people gather together in order to learn, this is more important. But, more important than what? Not really then, we're talking about the Avodah, but it's more important than what? Than foregoing the study of, than reading the Megillah, he would say. But Hode Yochid, right? If a person is just, you know, small, he's learning by himself, or he's learning with a small group or something like that, then in that particular case, what should we do? We should put aside our learning temporarily and go and listen to the reading of the Megillah. This is what started the argument in the first place, okay? So, now they say, saying that a small group or a yochid is not important, Ude Yochid Kal, I mean to say that's not as important as a whole group study. The Hot Nun, Didn't we learn as follows? And this is a Mishnah that we find in the Gemara, Moed Katan. Moed Katan, okay? Moed Katan over there, the final chapter, has many, many adopim which deal with the laws of mourning. Avelis, okay? And of course, what is the connection between Avelis and Moed Katan? Of course, the answer is very simple. Because we know that you observe Avelis, but there are certain times when we do not observe it. Namely, if a person, for example, would pass away on Yontif itself, or Chol HaMoed, you know that you cannot observe Shiva on that day, okay? You have to wait until the Yontif is over before you can be able to observe Shiva, okay? Of course, it's Shiva, Shloshim, and things like that. Or, on the contrary, what happens if a person, let's say, started to observe Shiva, and then along came Yontif? So in that case, what is the rule? Along came Yontif. So we know that Yontif cancels out the Shiva. Right. If a person was now in a period of Shloshim, right, and Yontif came, so the same thing, then in that case, Shloshim would be cancelled out. As for example, a person passed away, let's say, a couple of weeks ago, okay? The mourners are supposed to observe Shloshim 30 days, but when Shavuos comes, it's coming Sunday, so it cancels out the rest of the time. They don't have to observe anymore. So that's the reason why Avelis plays such an important role in the Gemara in Moed Katan. But also, the ways that they mourned in the time of the Mishnah, time of the Talmud, were a little bit different than the way we do it. Then they used to have women who would go and they would serve as mourners. In what sense? So we'll see. Yeah, you see it, for example, among Arabs, you know. Right, okay. And they had different things. Okay, for example, all right, so the mushroom. Yeah. Right. Okay. So, says, well, hot nun, didn't we learn? It says that Noshim Moed Anos Avalomitapos. That on Chol HaMoed, if, you know, a person passes away, so at the Levaya, then the women are Me'anos. Me'anos means that it's like recite a dirge together, okay? But Velo Metapkos, but they do not beat their breasts as a sign of mourning, okay? They did that too. In other words, as they went along, you know, they go, oi, 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 you know, clopping, okay, all right?
Clapping your hands together?
No, I don't mean clapping their hands. Well, maybe, yeah, I mean, I have to tell you, there's a difference of opinion as to exactly how it was carried out, okay? But one would say, you know, that you clap hands, and others would say, you know, that you beat upon your breast, okay? Which to me makes a little bit more sense, I mean, because we know that, you know, clapping and dancing, you know, is the way that you express the mourning.
Still, you shouldn't clap your hands on Shabbos because of it. You shouldn't look like...
Yeah, well, right, there's a big...